Well, if you don't need to remember which medications to take or the dosage or the frequency, you remove a lot of the burden that's placed on people's shoulders on the home right now. So the biggest objection is that nobody knows what we're doing and they don't know the capabilities that exist in the market.
Welcome to Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. We are here to fast track your success by leveraging the power of AI in business. Each episode brings you closer to the cutting edge of technology and entrepreneurship. Let's dive into the world of AI and make extraordinary strides in your journey. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next episode of Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. And this is your host, Ramesh Dalta. In our continuing series on healthcare, so I'm pretty excited to bring a company and a founder that's actually pretty local to me. In Sacramento area, an interesting story is that the founder, who I'm going to introduce in a second, he reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, hey, I would like to meet with you. And then usually it's the other way around. I'm scoping the land and I'm reaching out to the founders, I'm reaching the companies. But this is the first time in this series, actually, where the founder reached out to me. So I'm very happy and glad to share the company's story as well as his story. So with that, let me introduce Haido Health and the founder, Charles Gelman.
Thank you so much for having me, Ramesh. Appreciate it. Very excited to be on the podcast. And yes, I did reach out to you and we had a very pleasant conversation over lunch. Very excited to learn a little bit more about what you're doing here and share a little bit about the Haido story today.
Excellent. So I am pretty eager. I would like to tell the audience why I am excited about Haido Health and Charles' story. So first thing is, unlike the other companies that we have featured, which are mostly digital and digital health, so on the AI side predominantly, so online and digital side, Haido Health has got a physical component, which we will be hearing more. But more importantly, it resonated with me very personally because it's all about health equity and independence at home for people who use Haido Health products. And that really meant a lot to me. And I will share my own personal story about that later on in the podcast. So with that, Charles, why don't you introduce what Haido Health does?
Haido Health specializes in AI robotics in the home to enable access for patients that are at risk and they're taking multiple medications. The goal ultimately is to stabilize disease states in the home so you can stay out of the hospital, out of the emergency room, and you can maintain a healthy, happy lifestyle in the home. So Haido Health is in the home. It's a small robotic device, looks like a Keurig coffee machine hybrid with a ring, and it helps people assist themselves without being dependent on others.
So is it a single product that Haido Health has that addresses one specific need, or is there a vision of going broader than that right now?
Yeah, so we started actually with a variety of different disease states. We were trying to stress test the robotic device to see, how far can you take it before it breaks? And by knowing your limitations of what's possible, you can test out your initial hypothesis. And to our surprise and shock, it started working in patient populations that nobody has really ever studied before because they're so challenging. So there's a specific element. We had a patient in the Sacramento area. Her name was Gloria. She had severe dementia. And Gloria was putting her coffee pot in the oven, and she was doing many other things that people with cognitive impairment tend to do. And one of the things that she was dependent on were her caregivers, her daughter-in-law, to deliver those medications on a constant basis. And this creates a dynamic in the home that's very difficult and challenging. There's 39 million caregivers across the country. Think about that. For all the different caregiver needs, and they're solely dependent. So they asked us for help locally, if we could provide Gloria with the device. And we thought it wasn't going to work. And we gave them the device. And Gloria started to alter her behaviors to such a point where Gloria was actually taking her medications without the assistance of others. They went out to dinner, the daughter-in-law and son. They went to a movie, and when they got home, the device said, "Congratulations, your medications were taken." They couldn't believe it, so they asked me to look at the video recording because we do a dose-by-dose video recording, and Gloria was able to care for herself. And that is something that's very unique, hasn't been done yet.
So Charles, let's take it to the next level. So who are the target users for Hydo Health Chronic?
Yeah, so Hydo specializes in at-risk chronic care users that are taking multiple medications. We primarily focus on health plans that have, you know, very, very high cost with managing these patient populations. And we reduce the total cost of care for these patients.
So I know of people, for example, they take BP medicines or vitamins and maybe diabetics. So, but again, they are healthy in general in the sense that they are not senior citizens or whatever that is. You know, they are young adults, it could be. They're, you know, either going to school or college or working outside. So, I mean, generally, they know what to do. They have a pill box that I know. So they put Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the pills, and they take it. Is that a target market or not a target market?
I think it could be later down the market space if it's the right fit based upon the health plan's return on investment. So a lot of this comes down to the amount of premiums. People that are healthier tend to cost less because they utilize less services. The ones that utilize more are the ones that already have some type of disease state. So if somebody had a stroke or a heart attack, or they have, you know, mild dementia, or they have some type of ailment, hypertensive diabetics, they might be a good candidate for this device. So they no longer have to remember to take their medications, because this was essentially devised in the 1950s, which is a pill bottle. And this has never changed forms or since then. So we have to ask ourselves, if we know that patients are getting the medications, but we don't know whether or not they're taking them, how can you measure the impact of the medications if you had that gigantic question mark that exists of not knowing if people are doing the right thing or wrong thing?
So got it. So now I understand it's at-risk patients, right? So the at-risk could be whatever, right? So which is a stroke and all those areas. And so who depend on caregivers, whether it's a family or somebody else, you know, to help them take the medicines, and then it makes them independent and then be able to take care of themselves, right? So now suddenly we are talking magic here. So can you explain how the magic happens? So now let's say somebody reaches out to you and say maybe a healthcare provider comes and says, Charles, you know, I want to work with Hydo Health. So, and then you have a device. Can you just walk us through what happens afterwards?
Yeah. So if a provider or a patient was interested in the device, they would call their health plan. The health plan contracts with Hydo, and the patient gets the device for zero. No cost at all. This is pushed into their house, and it's to make things easier for the end users. Because you have to think about this from a provider standpoint. They see patients in a sterile environment, four walls of their clinic or their hospital. And patients spend 99.9% of their time in the house. So Hydo resides in the house. We ensure that patients get the right medications at the right time, the right dosage, the right frequency, and the right count. And by eliminating medication errors in the home, stabilize patients, and they can finally care for themselves without being fully reliant on doctors, nurses, and pharmacists that are, you know, have a significant burden right now because they don't have so much capacity. So we can increase our independence by doing the right thing through a device.
Got it. Okay. So now for the YouTube viewers, can you show us the device that you have? For the, you know, audio listeners, definitely we will point you to the YouTube channel so you can look at it. So just if you could show us the device, and then, so that's the device. And then it almost looks like a pill box modified. And then, so they put all the medications into that one device?
Yeah, so what's unique about what we have, it essentially looks like a Keurig coffee machine, you know, with a hybrid, a ring. And We use facial recognition for patients. They walk up to the device. It'll unlock with Face ID. Then,
oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have two cameras on there. Then we dispense the medications, and we have a number of different sensors in there to know exactly what's happening. Then with our pill bottle, we actually dispense the medications. It rotates, it pops down, and then we have a recording to take place to ensure patients are taking the medications. This device is a behavioral modification tool to elicit better outcomes and better health and happiness in the home. That is what we specialize in.
So Charles, I mean, actually, I'm more fascinated now. So let's say, I'm at risk patient, and I may have some medicines I have to take in the morning and some in the afternoon and some in the evening. So let's take two scenarios. Like first thing is, I know that I have to take medication. So I come to the device or whatever, so at noon. How does it know what medicine I have to take at that time?
Great question. So within our patented technology, it's embedded within each cap, doses, medication, the name, the frequency. All of that is preloaded. A lot of this information is on the labeling. And patients have to read those instructions. They have to remember when to take those medications. And most importantly, they have to take the right medications. And often, people get confused. They get confused with the directions from the doctor. They get confused with the different medications. Oftentimes, the medications are the same shape, color, size. So they might be taking two of this, three of this, one of something else. What we do is we eliminate all of the errors that typically happen in the home and smooth out the process.
So now let me take the second scenario where I forget to take the medication. So I forgot. Then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is where things get very interesting, and it costs almost next to nothing to do. If somebody forgets to take their medication, that's listening to this podcast or watching this, the easiest way to change a behavior is not the person that's forgetting them, because we'll send multiple notifications to them, but sending something to their loved one. So a text message. And that prompts a behavior change with the first user, because they might get a call from a loved one or a text message, making sure that they're all right. So my father lives on the East Coast. I'm in California. I can watch my father and check day to day without calling him, because I know that he's taking his medications on a regular basis. If he misses, then I get a notification, and then I can check up on him to make sure that everything is okay.
So good. So there's a notification that's going out. It's not that you're working with a patient, but which is even better, which is that you're forcing the behavior change by, you know, actually now the caregiver kind of gets involved where the, you know, so they get the notification. So they will do whatever is the protocol with respect to, you know, making sure that the medication is being taken. Okay, so that's good. So now you talked about technology, AI assisted robotics. I know it's a very broad term, so people will think about something. So, I mean, there are sensors you mentioned, the cameras you mentioned. So can you pare down the technology that's involved in implementing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it really starts with the end user in mind. When you start thinking about the UI and you start thinking of the technology, you have to make things simple and easy. So the engineering side of the device is very complex. You know, we designed all the boards in-house. We did the electrical engineering, the design, mechanical, everything in-house, which is great if you're an engineer. But for the people that are listening to this and watching it, what we've done is this is user design to make things easy, easy, easy for you. So when you walk up to the device, the last thing that you want to do, unless you want to, is put up code. So unlock with your face. Easy. So that means nobody else in the house is going to be able to lock the device unless they're the ones that are supposed to take the medication. Next easy button. Well, if you don't need to remember which medications to take or the dosage or the frequency, you remove a lot of the burden that's placed on people's shoulders on the home right now. Then, you know, for the people that may not have the motor skills or the functions in their hands, or maybe they are a little shaky, they don't even have to unlock the pill bottle because it's dispensed for them. The only thing they have to do is they grab a cup of water and they go to the device, and the device will make sure that they're safe with the medications, they're getting them the right way as prescribed. And if they do that, we've done multiple research studies that showed a drastic decrease in hospitalizations for people with heart failure and a decrease in the total cost of care for health. So it's a win-win for everybody.
I'm assuming that there's an automatic recording in the sense, not a video or a camera recording, but recording that the medicine has been taken. So that is happening so that when the patient visits the doctor can look at it. So, okay, look, your medication is all good kind of thing. Is that embedded into the operation?
Now, this is where things get very interesting. So we do dose by dose recording. So we know which patients are doing well. It's also the earliest precursor to an event happening in the hospital, the ER, is when you start missing your medications. So now if you, instead of having a doctor, a case manager, or a population health person that's involved, they can actually intervene before something serious happens and you see a series of doctors or nurses. So this is it's called the passive digital biomarker. That's an early indicator based upon patients' behaviors in the home, which you can now do something about. And this is something that's low cost and novel that nobody else has ever used in a real world environment. So it's very, very exciting.
That's great, Charles. So now, as I was talking to you, the thoughts that came to my mind are the entrepreneurial side of the story. I mean, this is not... I come across many entrepreneurs and many kinds of, how they've started. But here, interesting, it's not the, off the main road, I would say, right? It's somewhat of off the beaten track, if you see my drift there. So how did Charles Gelman come up with this idea? It's like, it's not that you worked in a company and said, hey, this is what it is. Can you tell us the story of how you came up with the Haido Health?
So I would say Haido Health is the evolution of my career and connecting the dots and putting them together. So I first started off working for a large pharmaceutical company where I started to witness the variation in care and prescriptions from one provider to another. So different specialties, they had different types of antibiotic regimens versus another. So when you start getting to healthcare, you start seeing these deviations in prescribing habits, as well as outcomes, and then as well as disparities in specific areas. You start putting those pieces together and you're wondering in your mind, is this something normal or is this just something I'm observing? And then once my career started to expand, I went from pharma to device to software, and I started studying all the different deviations and protocols amongst large regions of the country. And it wasn't independent to cities. This was something that was happening all over the place. And it led me into my master's research in clinical informatics and data science, where I started to analyze every single hospital across the country for mortality, readmissions, healthcare associated infections. And you see those disparities light up when you have data visualization tools. So that got me thinking, well, what if you can create a blueprint for health? What if there's a way to equal the playing field and access for everybody? But in order to create that, you have to create a standard without deviations. And the deviations are you and I. They're nurses, they're doctors, they're pharmacists. They're the different type of training mechanisms that we can influence if there's a standard way to do that. And I thought a device would already exist in the marketplace because I've been in healthcare for 20 years. And then once I defined what I wanted to do, I scoped the market high and low, and I couldn't find a device that would do what I needed. And so we created the Haido device from scratch, from piece of paper and pen. And my handwriting skills are terrible. I am not an artist by any means. So we have a group of very, very talented engineers that put this together. I could not be any more excited than I am now by pushing this out and making some amazing things happen in the marketplace.
Okay, Charles. These kinds of things don't happen overnight, right? So they take time, okay? So you had this idea, and then during a master's of clinical information, right, you did it at UC Davis, you said you tested this concept out. And then the other component of it is, it's like, so we all have lives to live, right? So we have to bring, bread to the table, we got families and this and that, right? It's not like a one day and said, okay, I have this dream, I want to do this. and then you quit the job and then you go and do it, right? That is not how it happens. So there has to be an evolution, right? So you have this idea, blueprint, and then you keep testing it, you keep building it. Can you walk us through that story of how long did it take for you to feel confident that this is what I want to do and this is what I can do?
Yeah, so we started looking at the market based upon, you know, asking, you know, being present in the market, asking patients. And I told you that story about Gloria earlier about the need. The need was so great in the marketplace and it's still so great right now. That was our measure. Our measure was, is it a good fit? So in startup world, there's product market fit. You can spend a lot of time, but if that doesn't, you know, make sense, then it's not going to go anywhere. But we knew that patients were asking and reaching out to us when we were still in the development state. So I knew that there was a huge demand. And what we've done is we've solely listened. We were open to exploring ways to utilize this device in different disease states that we didn't initially think was the right start. But we've...
You were doing on the side when you're working, or you just, by this time you already quit and then you were doing this research?
Yeah, so working full time and then moonlighting as well as working on weekends. We did that 24/7 for about 4 years straight, no breaks. So the dedication and commitment to making something like this happen is have to be 100% in. And
yeah, 100% passion, because you really want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, we did it because we saw the impact of patients' lives. So we filmed a production over 3 years, people with stroke, people with terminal cancer, people with heart failure, dementia, and you start seeing how people's lives are touched and the type of impact that you're making by creating something just to ease the burden and having such an impact on their lives. That's what's driven us to this point of just obsessing over making this product and trying to get it out there.
Hey, Charles, was there a personal side to this story? In the sense, I'll give you my own example. My dad had neurological issues and he passed away in a combination of Parkinson's and memory loss and so all that issues. And then the family struggled to take care of him, right? So, and then we relied on both professional at home, and my mom really took the brunt of that thing. So then let's say if somebody were to have that kind of story, then say, hey, you know, I really don't want other families to go through it, so I have to do something about it. So is there any component to that on your side, or is just based on what you saw out there?
Yeah, so my story was when I was a little bit younger. I was in my early 20s, and I was misdiagnosed. They thought I had a kidney stone. It was actually ruptured appendicitis, and I almost lost my life in the hospital.
Wow.
So I was very close. So every single day that I'm here is a good day, because I'm very fortunate the doctors were able to find what was wrong with me. But I have a scar from my lower abdomen all the way down where they had to, you know, open me up and save me. So I'm very fortunate for that experience. But I also understand that, you know, being part of the healthcare system, I was not terribly sophisticated at the time. I was going to school. I didn't know how to navigate the healthcare system. A lot of people struggle with that, millions and millions of people. So if there's anything I can do to help people in the home, I'm going to do everything in my power to do it.
So then the other component of entrepreneurial story is not just an idea, not just the passion, but how do you fund it? So how did you fund it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How are you funding it?
So when we first started with our own money, my co-founder and I, we put a little bit of money in, not a lot, but enough money to get us started. And then we started reaching out to angels, friends, and family. But we started out, and I didn't have a network of angels, friends, and family that have deep pockets to fund this. So our experience, our experience is very, very similar to how we've reached out to our funding mechanisms. So I reached out to you via LinkedIn. Almost 90% of our money was raised through LinkedIn, and we've developed those connections.
That's great. And then, what's your current state? Are you still raising? Are you doing pre-seed, seed? Are you earning revenue? Like whatever you can talk, publicly.
Yeah. We're pre-series A. So we are raising funding. So that, you know, if anybody's an investor and accredited, they can reach out to me via LinkedIn. And, we are, looking at expanding. And we have several NIH and NIA-funded grants that we're researching. One is with Rush University in Chicago, which we're focusing on mild to moderate dementia patients. We have several other pending grants that could broaden the scope for a lot of folks suffering from cognitive impairment.
Excellent. How long did it take for you to come up with, from the idea to incorporation and to where you are? Like, can you talk about a little bit of a timeline?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so from idea, I had the idea, and then I previously was a mentor at StartX Med, which is a Stanford-based accelerator. I worked at a different startup before for a small period of time, and the engineers that we worked at were absolutely fantastic. So when I had the idea, I reached out to several of the X team members. I said, do you want to go down this journey with me to a path of nowhere? Because oftentimes you have no idea where it's going to go until you start. And, you know, two of these exceptionally talented engineers decided to jump on the boat with me and sail out to the ocean to figure out where we're going to go. And we started to slowly figure out where to navigate. So that took us about 2 years to get, you know, kind of a nice working prototype. And then it's just evolved. Right now we're at version 4. We've been at it for almost 5 years now, and we have quite a bit of traction in the marketplace. So it's a very, very exciting time for us.
Excellent. I mean, I think you're really bringing healthcare and AI to the fruition here for really for common good here. So the last discussion I would like to have is the incorporation of AI into it. I have to ask you this question. So it is not immediately intuitive. It's not obvious how AI is being used. So Charles, let me ask you this question. I know I had answered already. Are you using AI because it's the hardest thing and so tying AI to your company and said you'll get to some eyeballs, or there is an artificial intelligence component to what you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the AI component of this is based upon the data that we collect. So my goal from the very get-go was to figure out the blueprint for care. The blueprint for care is based upon the outcomes of specific patients. Those outcomes are dependent upon the medications that they take. And you have to know dose by dose whether or not they take them if they're improving. So what we do is we know the magic top cocktail of medications to get the best outcomes for age, race, gender, location, income, all those social determinants of health. And then once you have enough of those numbers, you can start coming up with that, you know, mystical blueprint for health. And then you can start altering behavior based upon the digital biomarker. So maybe you message somebody in a different format or a different language or color scheme. There's a variety of different things that you can do to nudge them. Or maybe you find out that specific medications don't work well and you can make different recommendations. And this is all based upon the amount of data that we collect. So right now, we're very early in our process, but we've had some very, very promising outcomes. We had a health plan had an 80% reduction in hospitalizations for heart failure and a 70% cost save. And we are just at the beginning. So now once our data sets explode, there's much, much more we can do with facial recognition and you know, unique data sets on the face and see if those change between disease state regression, progression, and stabilization. So there's a lot we can do, and that's where you need to have significant funding to really explore all the different unique angles that occur.
So if I understand correctly, so it looks like you are some extent relying on some public data that's out there about the demographics piece of it. But most of the data that you are collecting and then proprietary data that through the trials that you're doing, you're collecting, and then you will be using that to train the models going forward, as opposed to like the whole generative AI piece where there's a vast amounts of public data that's out there. You're trying to mine it and use it. So you're not doing that, but you are generating, collecting data, and then mining the data. And then building algorithms based on that. Is that right?
That's correct, because everything that we're doing is unique data points. These data points never existed. So we're essentially creating the stream of data because we know exactly what's going on in the home. The home is the last frontier in healthcare. Everything has been in a controlled environment. So we're essentially capturing all the data that exists in the home, and then we're able to change those into rich data sets to actually change the delivery of care.
Got it. Hey, the last question. So what are the roadblocks are you seeing? So the funding, let's put that aside. Let's say, so you had vast amounts of fund, you can do a lot more stuff, right? So somehow you'll get it, right? Beyond that, let's say things are, so when you go talk to, healthcare providers or whoever that is, what are the objections that you get to hear first?
Yes. So this is that's a great question. And what I would say to you is that the biggest objection is that nobody knows what we're doing and they don't know the capabilities that exist in the market. So a lot of it is around education of what's passive digital biomarkers. And so you have to explain the technology to people. They understand the premise of people taking their medications getting better, but they don't understand that the capabilities exist right now. So what's intriguing is that we have a TEDx talk in Folsom in June, and we're going to be able to share for the first time ever our research results from Rush University in dementia and also show what technology exists. So by creating that awareness, I think that will really fast track the adoption and momentum within the company.
Fantastic. Hey, Charles, I wish you really good luck with Hydro Health. And then for yourself, you are creating a market. And then I am very excited about what you're doing. So I'll be monitoring, tracking your progress. So I really wish you good luck.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode. But remember, the power lies in applying what you've learned. If you found value in our conversation today, please share it with others who could benefit, subscribe for more, and consider leaving us a review. Visit theaientrepreneurs.com for more resources, including golden gems of articles, ChatGPT prompts, AI tools, tutorials, gifts, and much more. Let's keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Until next time.